Let's talk about this biography of Duke Ellington. I gather that he hasn't necessarily been fully understood as an artist.
I think not, and I think part of that is because he was himself a man who was not forthcoming about his private life, who didn't want to, he didn't want to tell the truth about himself. I mean, he was extremely a great keeper of secrets about his complex private life and his love life in particular.
And in your book and play about Louis Armstrong, for example, you made the point that Armstrong's popular image masked the real truth about the man. Is something similar going on with Duke Ellington?
Similar, except that Ellington was very, his public image was self-crafted to a great degree, and it reflected his own background. Ellington grew up as part of the black middle class in Washington, D.C., the black bourgeoisie. And it was central to his self-image that he present himself as a man of great polish, a man of great savoir-faire, a man who knew what fork to use, and these things were all true. But he was also a very earthy man, a man of great complexity, a man who was catnip to women and rarely said no to them. And that part he preferred to keep out of the papers.
And he also had an entrepreneurial sense, I gather. He studied to be a commercial artist?
That's right. He originally thought that that was what he was going to do. In fact, he didn't get very good grades in music in high school and was a high school dropout. But when he first heard jazz and ragtime as a teenager, suddenly, the direct relevance of music to himself and his life became clear, and the obsession clicked into place, and he realized that that was the thing he had to do.
Well, now, he was a pianist, a composer, and a band leader. In what role did he really change or make his greatest contribution to music?
Well, the twin roles of composer and band leader are completely intertwined. You cannot separate them. Billy Strayhorn, his close collaborator, said something very perceptive. He said, Ellington plays piano, but his real instrument is the orchestra. So he was, in fact, a very good and distinctive pianist, and the recordings we have of his piano playing are exciting and illuminating to this day. But what makes him important to the history of jazz is the pieces that he wrote to be played by his orchestra. He wasn't writing for the New York Philharmonic. He wasn't writing for some anonymous group of players. He was writing for those men on that bandstand. And their individual sounds and their individual personalities were as completely wrapped up in the compositional process as his own were.
And you also talked about Ellington's command of instrumental color.
Yes. I think that is, color and harmony are the two most distinctive features of Ellington as a composer, not melody. In terms of color, there had never been before Ellington, who started his major phase of composing around 1926, there had never been a jazz composer who used instrumental color with the same imagination, the same sophistication that a classical composer, say one of the Impressionists like W.C. or Ravel, used it. And again, in Ellington's case, these colors are not the fungible, interchangeable colors of the instruments of a symphonic orchestra, but they are the way that specific men play their horns. When he thinks of an alto saxophone, he's not thinking of alto saxophone. He's thinking of Johnny Hodges and the way that Hodges played. And you multiply that by 17, and you begin to get a sense of the complexity of color that he's using.
And you also talked about cross-section voicing?
Yes. Usually, in a big band, you have, well, say there'll be four saxophone players, and one of the alto players will be the lead player, which means he plays the top line, the melodies, and the others will be playing voices below him. And it'll be the same person who always plays lead. And the different sections will be balanced against each other in that way. Ellington doesn't operate that way. Ellington will mix the sections together instead of using them separately. He will change the lead player sometimes in the middle of a phrase just because he wants a different kind of color. In the song Satin Doll, which I think will be very familiar to your listeners, the lead player is not the alto player. It's a tenor saxophone player right in the middle of the ensemble. It's Paul Gonzalez who plays lead on that. And that's part of what makes Ellington's coloristic approach to orchestral writing so different, so individual, and so hard to figure out by ear. It's only been in recent years when we've started to get access to Ellington's manuscripts, which are on deposit at the Smithsonian Institution, that it's become easier for scholars to actually understand what he was doing and how he did it.
I was going to say, what kind of new insights did you discover in doing this book? You were studying his life and his music and how his life informed his music. I understand he had stockpiled private tapes of his compositions. And
oh, absolutely, absolutely. He saw that. He really saw that as the legacy that he was going to leave to his family, is the tapes that he controlled, that he owned, as opposed to the ones where the master tapes are owned by record companies. And there are a lot of them. I mean, we've only just begun to plumb all of the material that Ellington piled up in the second half of his life. But, I mean, what I learned from writing this book, I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, I thought I knew something about Ellington when I started working about Duke, and I did. I mean, I've been listening to his music all my life, since I was in junior high school. But when you really begin to engage with it on a piece-by-piece basis, and you start relating that music to what's happening in his world, in his life, when he's making it, and you have to do that because for Ellington, music was a species of autobiography. Then you get a very different grasp of how this music works and what it means. Because there are artists where their life and their work really do seem to be in some fundamental sense separate. In Ellington, they're completely mixed together. That's what he thought music was. Music was the daily diary of his inner life. And you've got to know about the life, I think, to really, in some basic sense, get to the bottom of the music. And that's why you want to write a biography like this, because that's the only way to really understand him.
And I was laughing when I was reading, in one place you say, he talked not to explain himself, but to conceal himself. And he kept no diaries, wrote few personal letters. What discoveries did you make? Is it possible to distill, you know, what surprised you the most about him?
Well, the most important piece of unknown source material on Ellington is a series of interviews that he did with a man who worked for Time magazine who was thinking of writing a biography of him. And Ellington talked to him at length. It was taped. It survived. It's as candid as he ever got. But as far as what surprised me most in writing this book, I would have to say it was the extent to which Ellington's music is collaborative in ways that he did not always like to acknowledge or like to give full credit to. Again, I knew this in a general way. I knew that there were questions about who wrote what between him and Billy Strayhorn. I knew that he had made use of material that he got from Sidemen and his band. What I didn't realize when I started writing this book was that virtually every one of the pop songs, the famous, the hit singles, so to speak, of Ellington, from Mood Indigo to Sophisticated Lady to In a Sentimental Mood to Don't Get Around Much Anymore, the melodies are written either by somebody else entirely, by one of the Sidemen, or in collaboration with Ellington. Ellington was not a natural writer of melody. Neither was Beethoven, neither was Stravinsky. That's not a prerequisite of being a great composer, but it is a prerequisite of being a popular songwriter. And Ellington had the ear to hear when Johnny Hodges tossed off a riff that you could turn into a pop song, and he had the compositional sense to know how to take these 8 bars and spin them into a 32-bar song that becomes a hit single. So that's something I knew he did it. I didn't know how important it was. And I didn't know how much of a credit hog he was, to put it very bluntly.
So does that change the way you view his genius?
No, it changes the way I view him as a man. And this is not an expose book. I'm not trying to write the truth about Duke Ellington, although there's a whole lot of truth in there about his private life. But what I feel is that it's a given that Duke Ellington was a great composer, a major figure of 20th century music. And so we need to understand him in a deep way, a true way, and it doesn't diminish him as an artist to acknowledge the flaws in his character or the fact that he was willing to depend on the work of other people at times. I mean, you tell the truth about great men as a tribute to them. You want to know the truth about them, and it doesn't make them less great just because they had flaws.
Would you say his major contribution was a combination of the way he used his orchestra musically and his own personal style, which kind of elevated his music?
I think that's a very good way of putting it. I mean, you can't... The songs, we love the songs, we'll always listen to the songs, but the compositions... We know them as played by the band. I mean, it is possible. You can buy a score of an Ellington composition like Coco, and your band can play it. But it's not going to sound like the Ellington band. And ultimately, the document that we want to experience is Ellington's recordings of these pieces, because it's the total effect, the fusion of the music and the men playing it, that creates what it is that we hear, what it is that we remember. Ellington's music, although he is the auteur, the primary composer, is to a great extent a collective achievement, and that can never be ignored in evaluating it and understanding it.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.